this is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's currently 37 degrees out at the airport, overcast, northwest winds of 12 miles per hour, and tonight about a 50% chance of snow, cloudy with a low around 28 degrees. Northwest winds of 10 to 20 miles per hour and more snow in the forecast for Saturday with a high near 42. Rain and snow. Sunday's looking cloudy with a high near 40. Hard to follow that, thanks to Andy and Mike. But we'll have your local news after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. Supreme Court has waded into the controversy over a pill that terminates pregnancies. Justice Samuel Alito has just issued an order temporarily halting a lower court ruling that puts restrictions on the drug mifepristone. This coming after the Justice Department and a New York-based drug manufacturer asked the High Court to block such rulings. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports on the emergency request filed earlier today.
The administration brief used the strongest language in urging the court to block the lower court orders. Quote, the district court countermanded the scientific judgment the FDA has maintained across five administrations, nullified the approval of a drug that's been safely used by millions of Americans over more than two decades, and upset reliance interests in the healthcare system that depends on the availability of mifepristone as an alternative to surgical abortion for women who choose to lawfully terminate their early pregnancies. And the administration said those harms would be felt throughout the nation because mifepristone has lawful uses in every state, for instance, to treat women who have miscarried. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
The 21-year-old National Guardsman accused of leaking classified documents will be detained without bail until at least next week. Soraya Wintersmith of member station GBH was at the federal courthouse in Boston where Jack Teixeira made his first appearance.
Teixeira sat quietly as the judge informed him of the two charges against him, unauthorized retention and transmission of national defense information, and unauthorized removal and retention of classified documents or material. If convicted of both, he could be sentenced to as much as 15 years in prison. Members of Teixeira's family stayed quiet in the courtroom up until he was handcuffed and escorted away by multiple court marshals, at which point a man shouted out, "I love you, Jack." Teixeira is now scheduled to appear in court again Wednesday. For NPR News, I'm Soraya Wintersmith in Boston.
Once again, the National Rifle Association is holding an annual convention that follows a series of recent mass shootings. In Indianapolis today, former Vice President Mike Pence referenced the recent attacks in Louisville and Nashville as he criticized calls for more gun control.
We don't need gun control. We need crime control. We don't need lectures about the liberties of law-abiding citizens. We need solutions to protect our kids.
As Pence took the stage, he faced a mix of boos and applause. Several confirmed and expected Republican presidential candidates are expected at the gathering this weekend. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 143 points before the close at 33,886. It's NPR News. Another person who took part in the pro-Trump riots at the U.S. Capitol more than 2 years ago is being ordered to serve time in prison. Today, a U.S. District Court judge sentenced 25-year-old Patrick McCaughey III to more than 7 years behind bars, half the time prosecutors had recommended. They say he used a stolen riot shield to crush a police officer in a doorframe as the officer was trying to defend the Capitol from rioters. The suspect apologized for his actions. For decades, leading medical organizations have called for diversifying the ranks of physicians as a way to close racial health disparities. NPR's Maria Godoy reports on a new study examining the barriers that are still preventing many students of color from reaching med school.
The study looked at responses from more than 81,000 students who took the medical college admission test, a rigorous standardized exam. The researchers found Black and Hispanic test takers were significantly less likely to go on to apply and enroll in med school compared to white test takers. Study co-author Dr. Utibe Essien of UCLA says students of color were also much more likely to report financial barriers, such as difficulty affording test prep and already having large student loans.
And even further, they're more likely to face discouragement from advisors when applying to medical school compared to their white counterparts.
The study appears in the journal JAMA Health Forum. Maria Godoy, NPR News.
JUICE is on its way to Jupiter. Today, the European spacecraft set off from French Guiana to study the planet, but the explorer is not expected to arrive for 8 more years. It's NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Rice University, where challenging convention, exploring new ideas, and making a positive impact is central to how they define unconventional wisdom. More at unconventional.rice.edu.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Kirsten Dobrath. An ash cloud that has drifted from a Russian volcano to Alaska is disrupting travel across the state for the third day in a row. Alaska Airlines had canceled 37 flights as of 11 a.m. on Friday, bringing total cancellations for the airline to over 90 since Wednesday, according to an airline spokesperson who said the destinations were, quote, too numerous to list. The cancellations have impacted flights to and from Alaska and within the state. The airline also warned that more cancellations are possible and delays are likely throughout the day. They're specifically monitoring the location and movement of the ash cloud over southeast Alaska. The National Weather Service's aviation warning includes parts of that region. Nathan Eckstein, a science and operations officer at the Volcanic Ash Advisory Center in Anchorage, says the cloud is hanging over the Gulf of Alaska and the North Pacific Ocean.
So we have kind of a complicated system because this volcanic cloud is wrapped into a low that's south of the Gulf of Alaska. Some parts of it have gone into British Columbia and the Yukon and Western Canada.
Tendrils of the volcanic cloud have even moved over Washington state. The cloud is made up of sulfur dioxide gas and some ash. Eckstein says they're analyzing images to see how the cloud is breaking up and where the pieces may move next.
The ash is not going to stay suspended forever. It's going to fall out. It's going to get rained out if it's underneath clouds that are precipitating.
Eckstein says that any ash in the cloud will likely disperse in the next few days. And Senator Lisa Murkowski met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv this week and said she's determined than ever to provide assistance to help that country defend itself from Russia.
The United States' commitment is an investment. It's an investment in the democracy of the free world.
Murkowski traveled to Ukraine and Poland as part of a bipartisan delegation that also included Democratic Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Mark Kelly of Arizona. Murkowski is a member of the Defense Subcommittee on Appropriation and said she was there in part on an oversight mission.
The United States commitment, what we have put forward into this fight to support Ukraine, is worth every penny of it.
The U.S. has given more than $35 billion in security assistance to Ukraine since Russia invaded in February of last year. An oil and gas company, Hilcorp, says it's not planning to replace an inactive pipeline with a history of leaks in Cook Inlet, and that for economic reasons, it won't reactivate at least one of the oil-producing platforms the line connects to. That's as the company looks at turning some of the platforms in the area into renewable energy research sites. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
The old 8-inch wide pipeline delivers fuel gas to a system of oil platforms in Cook Inlet. That gas is then injected into wells to help bring oil up to the surface. And the line has sprung a leak several times before, most recently in 2021, when an undersea leak about 6 miles offshore from Nikiski let out initially between 75,000 and 150,000 cubic feet of natural gas for about 2 days. In response, a federal agency ordered the company to repair the line and come up with a plan for its replacement. In a proposal filed with the Alaska Division of Oil and Gas earlier this month, the company said the costs associated with fixing the line didn't make sense economically, and that it wouldn't be working on repairs to the line this year. It added one of the platforms the line goes to, Platform C, has, quote, reached its economic limit and will not be returned to production. The other, Platform A, quote, has potential for future reactivation, but not as a standalone project, according to the report. It said the cost of repairing or replacing the pipeline were too much to justify the 3 billion barrels of oil equivalent per day it estimates could be recoverable from that platform. Both platforms were installed in the 1960s, and they haven't been producing oil anyway since the line sprung a leak 2 years ago. They're all part of what's known as the Middle Ground Shoal Unit, which Hilcorp acquired in 2012. The unit was previously responsible for about 930 barrels of oil a day. Oil production bears lower costs and higher profit than gas production in Cook Inlet, and the loss means less revenue to support Hilcorp's natural gas exploration and production there. The gas production has been under the microscope since the company announced last year it couldn't guarantee meeting supply on the rail belt beyond its current contracts. And the company's already looking at other ways to meet energy needs and repurpose its shutdown platforms rather than removing them. It has plans to test tidal power technology on two other platforms in the Middle Ground Shoal Unit, which have been offline for years. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Three men in separate incidents this month have been arrested for alleged bad behavior on flights to or within Alaska. The three recent arrests occurred over the span of 10 days. According to the charging documents filed in federal court, 42-year-old Eric Burns was on an Alaska Airlines flight from Ketchikan to Juneau on April 1st when he refused to sit down during the plane's final approach. Burns allegedly shoved a flight attendant before he was restrained and now faces charges of interfering with a flight crew. On April 5th, according to a different charging document, 37-year-old Adam Seymour was on an Alaska Airlines flight from Seattle to Anchorage when he made sexual advances toward a female passenger seated next to him and touched her against her will. The charges say Seymour appeared to be drunk, having apparently brought his own alcohol on the plane and at one point started smoking a cigarette. Seymour is alleged to have threatened other passengers who intervened and also had to be restrained. He's been charged with assault. According to yet another charging document, 61-year-old David Burke was flying first class on a Delta flight from Minneapolis to Anchorage on April 10th when he gave a flight attendant an unwanted kiss on the neck in the plane's galley area. A short time later, the charges say Burke allegedly broke a tray and plate holding the pilot's dinner before getting back in his seat and falling asleep. Altogether, the pilot determined Burke posed a security threat, and he now faces charges of interfering with a flight crew. The Federal Aviation Administration says the number of such incidents has spiked in recent years. In 2021, coinciding with coronavirus masking requirements, there was an all-time high of more than 5,900 reports of unruly passengers, according to the FAA. That dropped to about 2,500 reports in 2022, still far higher than any year prior to 2020. And the Kobuk 440 sled dog race, most of the attention is paid to the top three finishers, but this year one musher stood out as the fan favorite along the trail. Rookie Jessie Downey spent part of her childhood in the Northwest Arctic and was the only Inupiaq woman in the race. In fact, she might be just the second Inupiaq female musher in the race's more than 30-year history. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen talked with the Willow-based musher about her Kobuk run and what's next.
This was 23-year-old Jessie Downey's first Kobuk 440, and she says it was the longest and most difficult race she has ever competed in. She says the heavy snowpack along the course was a challenge.
And there were some harder spots, like solid, but the base was softer. It's like walking in mashed potatoes or trying to run in mashed potatoes.
Along with veteran musher Michelle Phillips, Downey was one of two women in this year's 440-mile race, which starts in Kotzebue and carves its route through six villages before looping back to the Northwest Arctic community. Race organizer Paul Hansen thinks Downey may be just the second female Inupiaq musher in the race's more than 30-year history. Hansen says the last Inupiaq musher, Kotzebue-based Lucy Nordlum, ran the course over three decades ago. Downey says she thought about the connection to her culture along the trail.
People have traveled by dog team for a long, long, long time between these villages and just all around the region, and it felt pretty special to be able to continue doing that.
Downey also got to visit a place she grew up in the region just before the race start. Her father, Wesley Downey is Inupiaq from Noatak, a village of nearly 600 people about 50 miles north of Kotzebue. Her Anna was Emmeline Downey and grandfather Mickey. Downey's family left the village when she was six. She says she received a warm welcome returning to Noatak by dog sled after an almost two-decade absence.
I felt like the whole town was out and everyone made signs, and they had just only found out I was coming up that day. And everyone was out hooting and hollering, and it was like I had just won a race or something.
She says it was also her first time visiting the six Northwest Arctic communities along the Kobuk 440 course.
Pulling into every village was a lot of fun. Everyone was so nice. They learned my name, Jesse Downey, and they're like, oh, are you from Noatak? Or, oh, my mom was cousins with your Anna. And so I'm like, oh, cool, we're family.
Downey first got into mushing while living in Willow. She loves it now, but at first was a little reluctant. It all started when an elderly neighbor asked for help caring for her dog team. Downey says her mother gave her a gentle push to assist the aging musher.
She kind of voluntold me, but it was good.
Downey went from working with other mushers' dogs to acquiring her own dogs and establishing a kennel of her own. She started Amagvik Kennel in 2016. Amagvik means home in Inupiaq. This year, she ran the 440 with all of her own dogs, which Downey says is significant.
When people say, oh yeah, she drove her own team, I put like all my time with them, helping them learn how to run and figuring out which ones can lead. And it was just me and the dogs.
Unlike many of the more established mushers in the Kobuk 440 who rely in part on sponsors to fund their kennels, Downey says besides support from friends and family, she has funded her kennel and races herself. She says she spent the past 5 years, from late May until early November, loading lead and zinc ore onto ships at the Red Dog Port. The port is part of the Red Dog Mine, a lead and zinc mine about 80 miles north of Kotzebue.
I can fund the kennel almost the whole winter. It gets a little slim at the end, but we make it.
Downey and her nine dogs crossed the Kobuk 440 finish line in ninth place after about 4 days and 2 hours on the trail. She says she definitely wants to return for another Kobuk 440, but isn't sure if it will be next season. After completing the race, she is now qualified for longer distance competitions like the Iditarod. This year, her boyfriend, Hunter Keefe, placed 11th in the Iditarod, and Downey says her goal is to run the Iditarod next year alongside him and other friends. According to a representative from the Iditarod, if Downey competes, she would be just the third Inupiaq woman to run the 1,000-mile course in the race's 50-year history. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Dressing up in armor and fighting with foam weapons might seem like child's play, but for some Ketchikan residents, getting together to role play is much more. KRBD's Eric Stone spent a rainy Saturday at Ward Lake with members of a group known as Iron Sky.
Alexander Kilgore is a barbarian, at least for today.
Well, this is our second annual Highland Games of Iron Sky, and Iron Sky is an Amtgard group. Amtgard is the national organization for this live-action roleplay.
Most of the time, Alexander goes by Paul Rabbins Jr. When he's not wearing deerskin armor, a kilt with his family tartan, and streaks of black face paint, he's a public affairs officer for the U.S. Forest Service and a member of Ketchikan's school board. But today, he's Iron Sky's champion.
I'm in charge of safety, essentially.
And although it's pouring rain and the wind is whipping, today's games are a go.
We're going to make sure people are somewhat comfortable here. We've got a fire going. We've got shelters. We're going to make sure they stay inside until it's time for them to get out and compete, but we're sure as hell not canceling it. If you canceled for rain in Ketchikan, we'd never get out here.
You might have heard of role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons, where players create characters, go on adventures, slaying monsters, chasing ancient artifacts, and so on. Tabletop game is governed in part by lengthy manuals and rolls of 20-sided dice. And this is similar, but no game boards and no dice.
We come together and fight medieval-style combat in battle games, and it's a lot of fun. Our weapons are made of PVC and foam for safety, but other than that, we fight in medieval-style combat with armor and swords and all that.
Everyone's got a specialty known as a class. As a barbarian, Alexander is an attack machine. His strikes break through armor, and even after he's killed, he can run around for 7 seconds wreaking havoc. But before we get to today's battle game, there are 5 events celebrating Scottish and Celtic culture, starting with the caber toss.
All right, before we start the caber toss, who needs a rundown of how the cabers toss?
The objective is to throw a long, heavy, traditionally wooden pole in such a way that it flips end over end. Today's caber is a little less traditional than you might find in the Scottish Highlands. This one is made of aluminum pipe and foam and adorned with brightly colored tape.
You're going to get yourself a few running steps, however far you want to go. Once you have momentum, you're going to shove with your shoulder that caber forward and launch it. You want that caber to land and turn over. If it doesn't fully turn over to the other side, it doesn't count for points.
It's harder than it sounds, and it takes a few rounds to crown a winner. But eventually...
Oh, that's definitely some points.
That could be a 10.
Alexander's son, 15-year-old Eidos Kilgore, is the big winner in the caber toss. He usually goes by Jameson Robbins. He says the events help him feel in touch with his roots.
My family is sort of two sides of the spectrum. I'm Scottish and I'm Mexican. So I'm learning Spanish to be with my mom's side, Spanish side, and then I do this to feel with my Scottish side.
Beyond the caber toss, there are some track and field events like the hammer toss and the shot put, and there are some more medieval and fantasy-focused events like the healer's race, where competitors race through a healing spell, and there's also the Irish charge or the Dizzy Izzy. Participants spin 5 times around a longsword and then attempt to run in a straight line and take a swing at a waiting victim. Not a bad way to spend a Saturday, says Eidos.
It's all about having fun and connecting with the people around you and building a large story with each other and just being with people and also not trying to take it too seriously.
That's something I hear from a lot of people. It's a welcoming, friendly environment. I find Bebs Hack aiming his Nikon at the field as folks run through the events. He tells me about his fantasy name.
Chimera Main, that's what I chose to be. And then, because it sounds like cameraman, but Chimera is actually like a mythical creature of like, it's multiple creatures spliced together into one. And so I thought that was a pretty cool name.
Chimera says it's great for anyone looking to combine their interest in D&D with a little arts and crafts.
I think a very important part about LARPing is it's a fun way of, you know, exhausting yourself, finding a outlet of like, you know, getting all that rambunctious energy out of you. And so, like, we go out here to smack each other with pool noodles. It is so cool.
After all 5 events, the scores are tallied, and there is a winner. Lord Ganon Silvermane, a.k.a. Corey Picard, is awarded a ceremonial sash of purple plaid and a brooch that endows the wearer with the opportunity to cast a tracking spell. He's also the sheriff, the monarch of Iron Sky. It's good to be king. Carly Hurst is somewhat new to the group. Today is her first day going by her fantasy name, Kira. She's an archer, and it's easy to tell. She carries a roughly 5-foot-tall longbow and a quiver of foam-tipped arrows.
I grew up doing archery. I was like an 8th grade cosplaying Katniss Everdeen, so I just eat up anything archery, and there's not a range here, so I haven't really gotten to shooting because getting a target up here, a lot of places won't even ship them. So hearing about this, I was like, well, you know, moving target for free, let's go!
And now it's time for the highlight of today's gathering, the Battle Royal. Members pair off into 2-person teams, pick up their chosen weapons, and start wailing on one another.
Ah, my leg! I'm going to post!
It can look a little silly, swinging foam swords and feigning grave injuries, but Kira says, in a way, it's therapeutic.
I think it's easy for people to maybe see it as like juvenile, perhaps. And for me, like, nothing has brought me to the present more than doing this. You know, like, you're running around, you're focusing, but there's still that element of play, which is just so big for me. So yeah, just like having a moment in your week where you can really let your guard down and just join like people who are going to support you through that the whole way through. It's just it brings a lot of comfort to my life, and I love the idea of sharing that with anybody.
It's a group with members of all ages, from toddlers to adults, all united by one idea. You can be anything you want to be. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Banner profits at big banks. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute.
JPMorgan Chase today reported a 52% increase in profit compared to the first quarter of last year, largely helped by higher interest rates. Wells Fargo's profit was up 32%. Citigroup profit rose 7%. All three also set aside more funds for potential loan losses should the economy sour in the months ahead. And in what may be a harbinger of things to come, retail sales fell in March for the second month in a row, down 1%, according to the Commerce Department. That squares with earlier data showing slowing last month in employment growth and in the services sector. Meanwhile, prices for imported goods fell last month, down 4.5% compared to a year earlier. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate investment and technology. See a brighter way.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the April 14th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Forman. Let's see. Ash plus snow equals spring? Maybe. One can only hope. I still say we're in much better shape than our friends over in Anchorage, where breakup is just going to be one long mess. We might be envious of their snowpack a little later this summer if rainfall doesn't fill up the salmon streams or the reservoir here in Kodiak. Time will tell. Whether we think it's spring or not, the bears have decided to make themselves known, or at least one of them has. A bear was sighted over on Near Island a couple of days ago, so it's time to start paying attention when you're out hiking. Got a couple of cool things coming up this weekend. The Women's Show, which features all sorts of arts, small businesses, everything from exercise to art. It's happening at the Women's Show this Saturday on Near Island from 10 to 4. It'll be in the Koniag building and the Afognak building, so park in the middle and walk between the two if you like. The other thing happening on Saturday night is Galley Tables. Galley Tables with the theme of Fools Rush In should be very entertaining. The doors open at 7 p.m. and the stories start at 7:30. That's Galley Tables at St. Mary's Gym on Saturday night at 7 p.m. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Well, thanks for that, Pam. It is Friday. We made it. If you work Monday through Friday, it is Friday, April 14th, 2023. Sunrise today was 7:02 a.m. Sunset tonight is 9:19 p.m. It's 14 hours and 17 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 55 seconds. Sunrise tomorrow will be 6:59 a.m., just breaking 7 a.m. Record high for today was 57 degrees in 1956. Record low was 7 degrees in 1977. And we have just a few minutes for community announcements. A reminder that today is the last day to get in your nomination for Volunteer of the Year. The selected volunteer will be awarded $1,000 to give to the Kodiak nonprofit of their choice. You can email your nomination to Carrie Irons, K-E-R-R-Y-I-R-O-N-S at gmail.com. Also, as Pam mentioned, Galley Tables is happening tonight. Tomorrow night, Saturday, April 15th at St. Mary's Gym. The theme for this month is Fools Rush In. Music starts at 7 p.m. Stories start at 7:30 p.m. And one more, the Board of Education regular meeting will be held on April 17th. That's Monday at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, F140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed online. For more information, contact Trinity, Secretary to the Board of Education, at 907-486-7566.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.